someone were to leave it intentionally, his prayer is still valid, but he has left a great reward. Okay. Likewise, he should in these two surahs, it doesn't have to be a surah in and of itself, but it should be at least, the scholars say, 3 or 4 verses long. You know, some bare minimum should be said. So you shouldn't just say, "Wal asr," and that's it, go down. You know, it should be at least 3 or 4 verses. It should make sense like a paragraph of text. Okay. Let's go at the end, inshallah. Unless...
No question.
It's in the Quran, the verses in the Quran. Unless it's a long verse, like Ayat al-Kursi. Okay, or a long verse. The point is, it should be some type of, you know, paragraph of text. Okay? Yeah, an ayah, yeah. No, basically you should recite a certain amount of text, a paragraph equivalent. Like for example, Ayat al-Kursi is a long verse, okay? It'll do the job. Inna a'tayna al-kawthar is 3 verses, it'll do the job, this whole surah. Basically you should recite not just a little amount, just a more than just a little amount, okay? There's the scholars say either 3 small verses or 1 long verse, you know? If you have a long verse, then recite that. So yeah, that's the fifth sunnah, or fourth? The fifth, okay. The sixth one is that the imam, or the one that is reciting alone, he should read out loud in the Fajr prayers, and in the first 2 rak'ahs of Maghrib, and in the first 2 rak'ahs of Isha, and in the Jum'ah prayers, 4 prayers. He should read out loud so that the people behind can hear. So there are 4 prayers where it is sunnah to read out loud. Fajr, first 2 rak'ahs of Maghrib, first 2 rak'ahs of Isha, and Jum'ah. If a person is leading the prayer, or he is praying alone, except for Jum'ah, because Jum'ah doesn't take place alone. But the other 3 prayers, even if he's reading alone in his house, Fajr prayer, it is sunnah to recite it in a loud voice. Okay? So it's sunnah. It's not a wajib or a rukun or a shart or anything. It's sunnah to recite it in a loud voice. Okay? Likewise, it is sunnah to say when you stand up from ruku', you say, سَمِعَ اللَّهُ لِمَنْ حَمِدَ رَبَّنَا وَلَكَ الْحَمْدُ. What are these 2 statements? Fard or wajib or sunnah? These 2 statements are wajib, okay? You understand? رَبَّنَا وَلَكَ الْحَمْدِ is wajib. But to go more than that, to go beyond that, this is sunnah. So you say, رَبَّنَا وَلَكَ الْحَمْدُ حَمْدًا كَثِيرًا طَيِّبًا مُبَارَكًا فِيهِ كَمَا يُحِبُّ رَبَّنَا وَيَرْضَى مِلْءُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمِلْءُ الْأَرْضِ وَمِلْءُ مَا بَيْنَهُمَا وَمِلْءُ مَا شِئْتَ مِنْ شَيْءٍ بَعْدٍ. You don't have to write it down. It's available in that green book I keep on telling you about to buy. Fortification of the Muslims through remembrance and prayer. I advise every single Muslim to get a copy of this book. It changed colors to green or purple or orange. Okay. The point is, this book is available. I encourage everyone to buy it. All of these du'as that a Muslim should use in his daily life and day-to-day life, they are all mentioned. Where to buy from? I don't know. Ask maybe Dar es Salaam has it or not. Okay, he has a different version of that one. And this would be number 7, yeah. So to add something more than the Rabbana wa laka alhamd is sunnah. Okay? Likewise, to say Subhana Rabbi al-A'la and Subhana Rabbi al-Azim more than once is sunnah. What was the saying of it once? What does that qualify as? What is the hukum of saying it once? Wajib. You must say it at least once, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la, okay, or Subhana Rabbi al-Azim. To say it more times and to say it in a more complete form, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la wa bihamdihi, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la wa bihamdihi, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la wa bihamdihi, 3 times, okay, or even more as long as it's an odd number. This is sunnah, and it's encouraged to say it more than just once in the prayer, okay. Likewise, another sunnah is to say the final tashahud upon the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Okay, the tashahud in and of itself, the final tashahud, what is the hukum of that? The tashahud in and of itself, what?
The first one is the wajib and the last one is the
rukun. The first tashahud is wajib, the second tashahud is rukun. If there's only one tashahud in the whole prayer, in other words, it's a 2 rak'ah prayer, it's going to be a rukun. Okay, if there's a 3 or a 4 rak'ah, then the first tashahud is wajib and the second tashahud is rukun. Now, After the tashahud, you say, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama. This portion is sunnah. So the first portion is rukun, the second portion is sunnah. Clear? 8th one, whatever, I'm not really numbering myself, whatever you guys are numbering. 8th one, okay? Likewise, to say it in a perfect manner, you know? Allah. 9th one, whatever. I mean, inshallah, you guys can compare notes and find out which one. Maybe one of you merged two of them together. So, for example, you say, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid. Wa barik ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama barakta ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid. Or there are other narrations also in the Sunnah concerning how to say the salam, but this is the most common one, and most of us have memorized this. The last Sunnah. This is mentioned in the Sunnah. This is the Sunnah, yes. Before that is Rukun. The Tashahud, At-Tahiyyatu Lillah, Wa-Salatu Wa-Tayyibat, As-Salamu Alayka Ayyuhan Nabi. This is a Rukun of Salah, the last one that you do in the prayer. The last one is a Rukun. What you say after this, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad, this portion is Sunnah. We're getting there. Patience. The last Sunnah of statements is pray as the dua. So it is Sunnah, strongly encouraged, after you finish the tashahud and after you finish the salah on the Prophet ﷺ, you make a dua before the taslim. Okay? And in particular, the Prophet ﷺ said, when one of you finishes the tashahud, he should seek refuge in Allah from four things. Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min azab jahannam, wa min azab al-qabr, wa min fitnat al-mahya wal-mamat, wa min fitnati al-Masih al-Dajjal. This is strongly encouraged, this particular dua, to seek refuge in four things: from the punishment of the fire, from the punishment of the grave, from the fitna of this life and death, and from the fitna of the Dajjal, the Antichrist. This is strongly encouraged, and anything after this, because the Prophet then said, let him make any dua that he wishes. Any dua of this dunya or the akhirah, it is sunnah to make it at this point in time, before the taslim. This is also sunnah, it is not rukun or wajib. Tayyib. We have now finished the Sunan of Aqwal. We now move on to Sunan of Af'al with an Ayn. Aqwal is with a Waw. Af'al is with an Ayn. Sunan of Af'al, there are many. Firstly, to raise your hands with the Takbiratul Ihram. What is the status of the Takbiratul Ihram itself? A Rukun. To raise your hands while you are saying it is Sunnah. Okay, to raise your hands while saying it is Sunnah. Likewise, to raise your hands when you stand up from Rukur. And to raise your hands before you go down to Rukur. And to raise your hands, what's the fourth time? When you stand up from the second Rak'ah. So if you don't stand up from the second Rak'ah, you won't raise your hands. These four places, it is Sunnah to raise your hands, physically raise your hands, up to your ears. Okay, to the level of your ears. Either this way or that way. I mean, in a sense, it must go up to there. That you raise your hands, also some narrations that even to the shoulder, like you just go up like this. So you raise your hands four times. These are the four times for the sunnah. Another sunnah is to place your right hand on your left hand on your shoulders like this. Okay? To place your right hand on your left hand. The right hand is on your left hand. Okay? Not on your shoulders, excuse me. No one corrects me. Chest. On your chest. On the lower portion of your chest. This is because the Prophet ﷺ said that... Or it is narrated in Sunan Abi Dawud that the Prophet ﷺ would place his right hand on his left hand on his sadr, on his chest. This is also narrated in Sahih ibn Khuzaymah. Be patient, Prophet ﷺ. You are very quick. Hold on. We're getting there. Right now we're talking about where to place the hand. Okay? So the sunnah is to place it on the chest. There are some narrations, but they are weak according to the ijma' of the muhaddithin, Imam al-Nawawi, and he was a Shafi'i, by the way. Imam al-Nawawi said in his Majmu', which is a famous work of his, which is printed in 27 or 8 volumes, that big, literally. I think one of the biggest books I have in my library, that long. He says in this book, al-Majmu', that the muhaddithin have unanimous consensus that the narration that mentions below the navel is a weak narration. This is reported by Abu Dawud. Abu Dawud, after he reported this, he himself said that this narration is weak. Okay, to place your hands, your right hand, on the left hand, below your navel, okay, this is a weak narration. It is not an authentic narration. And the narration that is hasan, or that is acceptable, states that the Prophet would place his right hand on his left hand, on his chest. Okay, this is reported by Abu Dawud and Ibn Khuzaymah, explicit. In both narrations, explicitly on his chest. Fi sadri. As for those people that pray with their hands down, like this, then know that there is no narration whatsoever, either authentic or weak or even forged from the Prophet ﷺ that he would pray with his hands down. This is blind imitation of a certain scholar for a certain reason that he did this, because he was whipped and beaten, that he could not raise his hands after that. So because of a blind imitation, the sunnah. The irony is that this is the madhab of Huna, who knows? Imam Malik. The irony of this is that Imam Malik, in his own muwatta, in his own book of sunnah, he now put his in the prayer. So how could it be? How could it be? It's working now. How can it be that Imam Malik himself narrates the hadith? He is the one that is narrating the hadith in his own book, Al-Muwatta. It's still available, the Muwatta. Go read it, go look at it. Imam Malik has the chapter, chapter number so-and-so, the placing of the right hand on the left hand in the prayer. He narrates the hadith and he goes against it. Is this possible to imagine even? So the Malikis, unfortunately, some of them, they blindly follow him to such an extent that they reject the own sunnah, the own hadith that he himself narrated. The reason that Imam Malik did this was because the Khalifa, for certain reasons, he beat him, he whipped him so hard that he couldn't raise his hands in prayer after that. Okay? But unfortunately, this is the problem of blind following, is that it makes you blind to what Allah and His Messenger says. And you exalt, like we talked about in Kitab al-Tawheed, you exalt a person to such a high level, to such a high status, that you forget who you really must follow, Allah and His Messenger. These imams, we go through them to follow Allah and His Messenger, but we don't blindly imitate them. We blindly imitate Allah and His Messenger. So the sunnah, we said, is to place the right hand on the left hand, where? On the chest. Okay, hold on a second. Better? Tayyib. So that was, which number sunnah? Okay, the third one, right?
The third one
is to stare at the place of his sajda. In other words, not to move his eyes left or right, but to stare at the place of his sajda during the prayer. Okay? This is narrated in certain hadith that the Prophet ﷺ would look at the place where he is going to do sajda in the prayer. Okay? Another sunnah is that he should stand with his feet slightly apart. Not too much apart and not too close together, but slightly apart. Okay? So for example, let me show you, for example, like a slight manner. Some people, they go like this in the prayer, in order to fill in the gaps. This is not allowed. If you're not filling in the gaps, if the brother next to you is not filling the gaps, don't keep on coming closer together with him. No. Stay with your proper place. Likewise, to stand like this is against the sunnah. To stand with your feet together is against the sunnah. To stand with slightly apart, just a normal gap, if you like. Okay? Well, that's coming later on. But right now we're talking about the gap between the feet. It should be of a normal length, okay? Likewise, of the sunnahs, is that when you go to ruku', then your fingers should be slightly apart. Oh, you want to be exhibit A again? No? I'll draw it, inshallah, because just the finger should be slightly apart. Let me do this here. The finger should be slightly apart in ruku', like it is, okay? So you shouldn't clasp them like that, nor should you make them wide out. Slightly apart, like this. And we also mentioned that the proper way, or the proper way of doing the ruku', is that your back should be straight and your eyes looking at the place of sajda. This is also sunnah. The rukun is that you actually do ruku', which is the minimum ruku', would just be like this. But the sunnah ruku' is you go all the way down, your back is straight, your hands are slightly apart, your fingers are slightly apart, and you are staring at the place of sajda. This is the perfect ruku'. The minimum ruku', which is what is the rukun, is that you just, you know, go a little bit down and your body is just about to do, you know, you can touch your knees and you stay there until you are peaceful, you are at rest, and then you go up again. But the perfect way of doing that is to, like we said, take your back straight and your hands should be slightly apart. Okay? Okay, another sunnah is that the person should first of all go down on his hands and then on the knees when he's going down to sajda. Now there is a difference of opinion because the Prophet said one of you should not imitate the camel as it goes down. Rather, he should be different from the camel. Now, the scholars then have differed about how the camel goes down. Because do you consider its front leg, its back leg, its hands, or its feet? I mean, basically, there's a difference over how the camel goes down. So basically, the opinion that I follow, and the one I'm teaching you now, is you go with your hands first. So you go like this. Look at my hands and look at my knees. You go like this. You notice? First the hands come. First, when you go down, the hands and then the knees. Okay, this is the opinion that I follow. Like I said, there's a valid difference of opinion. If you want to follow another opinion after research, that's up to you also. You know, There's a very good ikhtilaf, very good ikhtilaf on this, okay? Likewise, he should firmly hold on to the ground on the place of sajda, okay? He should do sajda in a firm manner in the sense that all of his body parts are touching in the sajda. Now there are seven body parts, by the way, we forgot to mention, you might want to add this in your wajib section. There are seven body parts, it is wajib that these body parts, they touch in your sajda, the ground, okay? What are these body parts? What are these things? The Prophet ﷺ said that I have been commanded to perform sajda on seven limbs, on seven functions, on seven body parts. The first one he said is the face. And when he said the face, or excuse me, he said the forehead, he said the first one is the forehead, and yet he pointed to his nose. So he said the forehead and he pointed to his nose, meaning that both of these parts have to be touching the ground. Okay? And then he said the two hands, and then he said the two knees, and then he said the tips of the toes. So how many things are there? Seven. This is one, this is two, three, four, five, six, seven. Okay? So let me show you that too. Is that basically, when you perform sajda, okay, look at this now, the tips of my toes must be touching. And this goes against the sunnah of people when they go like this in sajda. No. It should be down, the tips of your toes must be touching. Likewise, your knees obviously are going to be touching. Likewise, your hands are going to be touching. And then obviously, both of your forehead and your nose. And this is another problem. Many people, they do sajda, and yet they do it on their head with their nose above the ground. Okay? Or they do it on their nose and their head is not touching. Both of these things have to touch. Both of the forehead and the nose, it must touch the place of sajda. Okay? Another sunnah is that your hands should be slightly, your fingers should be slightly apart in the sajda. Neither like this, nor like that. Just slightly apart in the sajda. Yet another sunnah is that, slow down, okay. Your fingers should be slightly apart in the sajda. Just like we said for the ruku', that you don't make your fingers wide apart, nor do you make them all together, just slightly apart. Yet another sunnah is that when you are in sajda, you do not make your elbows go out all the way, nor do you make them touch your body, but in the middle. Okay? You don't make it go out, because the Prophet ﷺ forbade looking like a dog, forbade this type of, like the dog does. You don't take it all the way out, and you don't hold it close to your body, but in between. So for example, it'd be like that. Well, let me try doing that again too. Okay? It would be something like this. Like that. Okay? You don't take it all the way out, neither do you take it all the way in. It's just slightly apart. Okay? So this is also of the sunnah, because the Prophet ﷺ said he forbade the acting like a dog, or the taking out of the dog in the prayer. What number are we on right now? Number 9. Number 10 is... This is 9. Okay. Okay, another point during the sajda is that his stomach should be free of his thighs. In the sense that he is doing sajda in a normal manner. And he shouldn't be close together. It should be a normal manner. His stomach should be free of his thighs. Okay? You understand that point? So his stomach should not be touching his thighs. It should be a bit away from that. Okay, like a normal sajda, basically. Yet another sunnah of the prayer, and like I said, I'm sorry, really can't get into detail in the evidences, but all of this is narrated in the hadith of the Prophet. You can look it up, go to Sahih Bukhari, go to Sahih Muslim, go to, you know, Bulugh al-Maram, any books out, and you'll be able to find all of these sunnahs that the Prophet used to pray in this manner. Okay? Another sunnah is that he should sit, it is called in the istirash manner. Just write this down for now, I'll show you what it is. He should sit in the istirash manner for the first tashahud and between the sajdas. And he should sit in a tawarruk manner for the last tashahud. He should sit in an iftirash manner. We'll show you, we'll demonstrate for you how it is. He should sit in an iftirash manner for the first tashahud and for sitting between the two sajdas. And he should sit in a tawarruk manner for the second tashahud. So now, what if a prayer is of two rak'ahs? What should he do? No, iftirash. Iftirash, because that's the first tashahud. In this case, you take it in the other way, from the other way. So if it's two rak'ahs, it's sunnah to sit in an iftirash manner. If it's three or four rak'ahs, then in the second one, you're going to sit iftirash, and the third or the fourth, you're going to sit tawarruk. Now, what is iftirash, and what is tawarruk? Pay close attention. Okay, this is the iftirash manner. I'll show you on different angles here, unfortunately. Is that basically, this is the iftirash, and that, I think it's best to do it this way. Is that your right foot has your toes pointing forward, and you are sitting on the sole of your left foot. This is iftirash. Okay? Is that clear? Everyone can see? Your right foot is pointing towards the qibla, and you are sitting on your left foot. This is iftirash. Okay, tawarruk means that you have taken your left foot and put it underneath your right foot, so you sit basically on your thigh and on your left buttock like this. This is tawarruk. Okay, so the Prophet in the second rak'ah, in the first tashahud basically, he would sit iftirash. And in the third or the fourth rak'ah, he would sit tawarruk. Everyone saw that? Clear? Okay. Likewise, it is of the sunnah to turn right and then left while saying the taslim. We said that what is the status of the first taslim? The first taslim is? Rukun. Rukun. The second taslim is? Sunnah. Sunnah. Now, when you say the taslim, to turn right and then to turn left is of the sunnah. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ said that, or in fact, Anas, or Hayd Amir Sa'd, I think in Abi Waqqas, he reported that, I saw the Prophet ﷺ at the end of the prayer, he would turn right and then he would turn left, so much so that I could see the whiteness of his cheek. I could see the whiteness of his cheek. He would turn to such an extent, right? Guys. He would turn to such an extent that you could see the whiteness of his cheek from the right-hand side and the left-hand side. So this is also a part of the sunnah. So with that, we have completed the sunnah of salah of aqwal and of af'al. Statements that are sunnah and actions that are sunnah. We now move on to another long list. And that is what is discouraged during the prayer. Not what destroys the prayer, but what is discouraged, what is makruh during the prayer. What is discouraged during the prayer. Again, a long list. Firstly, what is discouraged is that he should only recite the Fatiha without saying another surah. Because we said to say another surah is what? Sunnah. But this particular sunnah is strongly encouraged. And that after he says Fatiha in the first surah Qad, he should repeat another surah after the Fatiha. Likewise, it is discouraged to repeat the Fatiha for no reason. Because the Fatiha is a rukun and you only do rukun once. So you don't repeat the Fatiha. And I think his sister asked me yesterday about repeating Fatiha. She didn't pay attention. And it is discouraged, like I said to her then, is that this is a rukun. You shouldn't repeat it again, even if she wasn't paying attention. Unless she realizes that she did not read the Fatiha, in which case she must read it in the first place. Or she read it with a major mistake, like she skipped a verse or something. Obviously, in this case, she will repeat it. But to repeat it for no reason, just to say it once and then say it again, this is discouraged in Salah. In the same rak'ah, obviously. You have to say it in every rak'ah differently. Another thing that is discouraged, number three, I think? Number two, okay. Number three. Saying only the Fatiha, number two is repeating the Fatiha. Repeating the Fatiha in the same rak'ah for no reason. Okay? Number one is saying only the Fatiha without going on to another surah or another verse. Number two is repeating Fatiha. You say Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen all the way to the end, and then you say it all over again, Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen all the way to the end. This is discouraged. Okay. The third thing is to turn without any reason, to turn around for no reason. Okay? Because Aisha said in the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that this is a stealing, that the shaitan steals from your prayer. So when a person is praying and you find that his eyes wander here or there, or his body turns a little bit here or there, this is stealing, that the shaitan steals from your prayer. Shaitan is stealing from your prayer because it goes against the humbleness that a person should have during the prayer. So another thing that is discouraged is to turn for no reason. Yet another aspect which is encouraged is to close one's eyes during the prayer. Okay, the proof for this is what? We just mentioned it a little while ago. Because it's sunnah to look at the place of sajda. So obviously to close your eyes, you go against the sunnah. Okay. Yet another thing which is discouraged is to carry something for no reason, like carrying a baby for no reason. If you must carry, then it's fine. But if you can, for example, give the child or something to another person, then you should not be carrying it. Okay? But it is allowed to, because the Prophet ﷺ, he would carry the daughter of Zainab in his hand. And he would pray while the daughter was in, while his granddaughter was in his hand. Okay? So when he did ruku' or sujood, he would place her on the ground, and then he would pick her up. Because Allahu A'lam, the scholars say that there was no one in the family or at that time to take care of it, and that the Prophet's household, they might have gone somewhere, Allah knows what, but he was carrying Zainab. Zainab's daughter. But they say then that to carry a child or something for no reason is discouraged. Because why? Obviously your concentration becomes less. Another thing that is discouraged is to stick out his elbows during the sajda. We already went over this. It is against the sunnah. To stick them out like a dog, like this or like that, all the way. You know, like your hand should be close to your ears. Now to go like this, right, or to go with your hands close with your elbows sticking out, this is discouraged because the Prophet ﷺ forbade the sitting of a dog, basically. And this is how the dog, if you look at the dog, this is what he does. And this is not what we are supposed to do. What number are we on?
Seven.
Number seven is to mess around during the prayer. Just do ridiculous acts that are not of the prayer. To do external acts. So for example, and they give many examples of combing your hair, or straightening your beard, you know, or just checking your clothes, you know. This is abas, it is a wasting of time, okay? Because obviously this goes against the humbleness and the fear and the khushu' that one should have during the prayer. So these type of acts are also discouraged, okay? This obviously is common sense. Number eight is to place the hands right on the navel. This is, by the way, not what the Hanafis do. They place it below the navel. We're saying it's discouraged to place it right on the navel. This is because the Prophet said in an authentic hadith, the Prophet said forbade a person from praying with his hands on his navel. It should be above it. This is the sunnah. Okay. And one of the methods of the Hanafis, they have it below the navel. But to have it on the navel, this is discouraged. Another aspect that is encouraged is to is to open his mouth or to cover his mouth with something. Because the Prophet ﷺ also in one hadith, he forbade this. That during the prayer, a man, if he has a turban on, or a woman has niqab on, if there are no men in front of the women that are her, that are not her mahram, she should take the niqab off. Okay? Likewise, the men, if they have a turban or something that they're covering with, they should take it off their face, their mouth. Okay? They should take it off there. Likewise, it is discouraged to pray to an object besides a sutra. So basically, you can say, and the opposite of this, it is sunnah to pray to a sutra. What is a sutra? It is basically any object in front of you that prevents a person from breaking your mouth, crossing in front of you. So basically, it is discouraged to pray to other than a sutra. In other words, if a person is praying in this row, and there is nothing in front of him, this is discouraged. Or if you were to face, now the scholars also say, if you were to face a picture or face another human being that whose face is towards you, not his back, because the person's back can act as a sutra. But if he is, like I'm sitting here, someone were to come and pray right in front of me, this table were not here, this is discouraged. Because it seems like what? Shirk, it seems like worship. So it's discouraged to pray to other than a sutra, and it's discouraged to pray to a picture or a stone or a rock, even though your niyyah is for the sake of Allah, but when someone sees you who might think that, you are worshipping that picture, or you are worshipping that fire. Okay? So this too is discouraged. In other words, you can say, we could have mentioned this in the sunan, and we say that it is sunnah, this is one basically, it is sunnah to pray to a sutra. Or we can mention it now, and we say that it is not sunnah, it is discouraged not to pray to a sutra. And in fact, some ulama, and this perhaps is a slightly extreme opinion, but some ulama said that it is wajib, obligatory, of the wajibat of salah to have a sutra, but I don't agree with this opinion. I say that it is strong sunnah. Because the Prophet said, whenever one of you prays, he should take a sutra. He should take some object. For example, this Quranic rack, or if he's praying, go to the wall, or take that chair. Something that prevents people from crossing in front of him. Okay? Because when a person is praying, we'll inshallah get to that, you're not supposed to cross in front of him. But if he has a sutra, if he has that object, then you're allowed to cross in front of that object. Another point that is discouraged, number what now? Whatever the number is, I mean, you just write everything down, inshallah. Number 11, the next thing is to wipe away or brush away rocks or sands when he is committing or when he is doing sajda. Or to do it for no reason. So for example, when he's going down to sajda, many people, like when you had the old times, the masjid would be rocks and sand, they would wipe it away. Okay? So the Prophet, when he was asked about that, he said, once do it, and even that removes some of the reward. Because why? Because you're going against the salah in the sense you're doing acts that are external to the salah. So to wipe away something before you do sajda, this is makruh, but it's allowed. The Prophet said do it once, if need be, but even that will remove some of the reward. Also the scholars say like touching your beard and playing with your clothes, and basically it all comes under messing around. I mean doing things that are outside the salah. Another thing that is discouraged during the prayer is to lean against something. Okay. Now we said that standing is a what? Standing is a rukun of prayer. So if someone leans against an object temporarily without putting his full body weight to it, this is makruh. If someone leans so that if that object were removed, he would fall. What does that mean? His salah is gone because he has gone against the rukun. But if someone just takes some rest from a back support for no reason, against a wall or something for no reason, just a little rest, this is makruh. If he takes extreme rest in the sense that his body weight is dependent on that object, this is haram. It makes the prayer null and void. Likewise, it is makruh to say alhamdulillah when you sneeze in the prayer, and also to respond to that alhamdulillah by saying arhamukumullah. This too is makruh. Likewise, it is makruh to break your fingers. What do I mean by break your fingers? This basically. Can't do any now because I'm so used to doing this. But to do this during the prayer is makruh. Why? It goes back to forcing around, messing around, whatever you want to call it. Basically doing things that are not a part of the prayer. Basically everything that is not a part of the prayer and you're doing it, it is discouraged. You know, I mean, just to put it very general terms. Okay, that was a list of the more important things that are makruh in salah. And we don't have, we cannot discuss every one of them because whatever you do that goes against the salah, like you take your glasses off and you put them in your pocket, anything that basically, you're doing it for no reason, it goes against the khushu of the salah, it's makruh. Okay, now certain aspects, this is the next section now, those things that break your salah. Those things that break your salah. In other words, if you're praying and this act occurs or this thing happens, your salah is null and void. Okay, so this is the next section now. And after we finish this section, we'll leave some time for questions and answers, inshallah. And tomorrow we're going to start Sajdat al-Sahu or the Sajdat that you do out of forgetfulness, and we'll do some more topics, inshallah. So those factors which break your salah, who can mention the most important thing? Breaking wudu, exactly, very good. Number one, that which breaks your wudu. Okay, so if you are praying and some gas comes out, or some urine, or some feces, your salah is automatically broken. Khalas, you have to start all over again. Okay? Anything that breaks your wudu in the prayer automatically breaks your salah. Number two is to expose your awrah or a great part of your awrah intentionally. Okay? To expose your awrah or a great part of your awrah intentionally. So if it is exposed unintentionally and you cover it up immediately, inshallah this is forgiven. Suppose you're praying, and in our times this doesn't really happen because we're wearing different types of clothes. In the Prophet's time in the past, people would just wear a garment that they would put around their bodies. So there would be like a slit for their legs to walk. So if the wind blows, the garment would come apart, would separate, and you might see the awrah. So if this happens unintentionally and you immediately fix it up, inshallah that is forgiven. But what is not forgiven, what breaks the salah, this is not like makruh. What's the difference between the last chapter and this chapter? Or the last section and this section? Imran. The makruh, you're discouraged, but your prayer is still valid. Your reward is lessened. As for what we're mentioning now, it breaks the prayer. You have to start all over again. Okay? So if you were to expose your awrah intentionally, or it was exposed, some scholars say, for a long period of time, even if it's unintentional, then this makes the prayer null and void. Okay, another thing that breaks the prayer is to turn your back towards the Qibla. And this obviously goes against the shart of the prayer, that you have to face the Qibla. So if you were to move so much around that your back is not facing the Qibla, then your prayer is null and void because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commands you to face the Qibla. So if you don't face the Qibla, then your prayer is null and void. Obviously, one is the only exception to this rule. Nafil and traveling, and you're on a mount or a beast or a ride. Okay, then you're allowed to face the Qibla. Okay, another aspect that breaks the prayer is if a najis falls on you and you are aware of it and you don't remove it. Okay, a najis falls on you and you are aware of it and you don't remove it immediately. Or if you remember in the prayer that you had a najis on you and you didn't remove it. So, for example, let me give you two scenarios, both of them the same case basically. You're in the prayer. Okay, you realize that, for example, you changed your kid's diapers or something, and some of that najis fell on you. In the prayer, you realize this. Immediately, you have to do something about that. Either you leave the prayer and wash yourself, or if you're wearing like a cloth, or you can take the clothes off, or it's on your shoes, you throw it away. You take it off right then and there, as long as your awrah is not exposed. So, for example, if it's on my shalwar, right, or kameez, excuse me, I'm allowed to take my kameez off because I'm wearing it underneath garment. So I'm still fulfilling the requirements of the prayer. If I know that there's najis on my qamis, I immediately remove it so that I'm wearing my undershirt, and that's fine. I continue the prayer that way. Okay. Likewise, if something fell on me, or if some najis were to fall on me during the prayer, and I realized it, and I didn't remove it or I didn't do anything about it, then the prayer also is null and void. Suppose you prayed and you had a najis on you, and you finished your prayer. So suppose you prayed and you had the najis on your sleeve or something. You didn't remember about it. You finished the prayer. Is your prayer valid? Yes, it is. Because in this case, Allah has forgiven you because you didn't remember it during the prayer. So in this case, this thing is forgiven.
Question about those two
things. Okay. Another thing that makes the prayer null and void is to do extremely, to do a lot of actions that are not of the prayer. Okay? To do a lot of actions that are not of the prayer. So we said it's makruh to do actions that are not a part of the prayer. If these actions are increased, so suppose you're scratching yourself and combing your hair, and if these actions are increased, then your prayer is null and void. Now the question arises, where is the fine line? Where is the criterion? Okay? Is it one act, two acts, three acts, four acts, what? The scholars, some ulama, they give a number, but there is no number found in the Quran and Sunnah. So the correct opinion is that if someone were to see you and he would not know whether you are in prayer or not due to your actions, then your prayer is null and void. Okay? So if you're looking at someone and he's standing like this, once in a while his hand goes to his beard, once in a while, then this is makruh, but you know that he's in prayer. Okay? On the other hand, if someone is, you know, standing up and he's combing his beard all the time and playing with his hair and making sure, you won't even know he's in prayer. So if it goes to that level that you don't even know he's in prayer, then his prayer is null and void because he has done too many actions. Another aspect that makes the prayer null and void is to lean against an object. And what is the criterion about this leaning? That if that object were to be removed, he would fall. In other words, he leans so heavily. Why is this a thing that makes the prayer valid, invalid? Because he went against the rukun of the prayer. Okay? Another aspect that negates the prayer is that he leaves or he adds a rukun on purpose. On purpose, he leaves a rukun or he adds a rukun. So for example, he has to pray four rak'ahs, on purpose he prays five. Or on purpose he prays three. Obviously his prayer is not valid. If he does it accidentally, we're going to get there in a little while. But if he does it on purpose, then this makes his prayer invalid. Likewise, if he changes the order of the rukun, we already talked about this. This goes against the rukun in of itself. You must say the rukuns in order. If you go against one of the rukuns, this too makes your prayer null and void. Another aspect that makes your prayer null and invalid, we are now on number what? Nine. Number 9, 10, whatever, roughly. 8, mashallah. 8, 9, 10, going. Alright, same thing. Whoa, mashallah. Number 12. Point is, you know, some things you can make different categories, others you can... Okay, another point is to say the salam before the prayer ends. To say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah before the end of the prayer. This automatically makes your prayer null and invalid. Another point is to purposely recite Surah Fatiha in an incorrect manner. Obviously we're talking about everything that goes against the arkan. To say salam, did you write that one down? To say salam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah before the end of the prayer. Okay? Before the end, you should say salam at the end. If you say before the end, you say after the second rak'ah, this breaks your prayer. And by the way, this is the manner that you should break your prayer if you have to. Suppose you're praying and a life-threatening situation occurs, you know, that you have to break your prayer. Suppose, Jani, you're standing next to a river or something and your child's going to fall in or something. I mean, some type of life-threatening situation. In this case, you have to break your prayer and save the child, obviously, right? How do you break your prayer? You say, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and then you go and do your stuff. Because you have to break the prayer. You can't continue it while you're praying. So you have to break the prayer and then go and save the child or whatever, you know. Suppose, side point, footnote here, we're going into footnote mode, okay? Suppose you remembered in the prayer that you did not have wudu. In the prayer, you remember that you didn't have wudu when you started. Do you turn and say salam and then go? Who says yes? You say yes. Who says no? You come on, be brave. Okay, so we have two yeses and five noes. The majority wins. Why is that? Because when you didn't have wudu, then you're not in prayer in the first place. You have nothing to break away from. When you realize in the middle of the prayer that you didn't have wudu, it means you never started your prayer in the first place. So, if you have to go and do wudu, and this is, by the way, an obligation, if you're standing in jama'ah, right? Even if you're the imam, in the middle of the prayer, and you realize you did not have wudu, then instead of being shy of mankind, you should be shy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Remember, this is a responsibility. And some ulama say this might even lead to a type of kufr, that you're purposely praying without wudu. So you're in your second rak'ah, and you realize that you didn't make wudu, and you broke your wudu, and you don't have wudu at that point in time. You have to leave the jama'ah in front of everyone. Don't be embarrassed, don't be shy. Go to the wudu area, and then come back. Okay? But the thing is, you don't have to say, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. However, the ulama say that what you should do is pretend that you have like a nasal bleed or something, so that people don't have, bad thoughts of you. So they like take a napkin out or something, cover your nose, that as if you have some type of blood coming out, or there's some type of, or you're gonna, like, so that they don't think these thoughts of you. So the ulama do say that when you leave the prayer, don't just stand up arrogantly and walk away. People might think, what's wrong? But rather show that there's something wrong, Show that there's something wrong. Is that maybe I'm gonna vomit, or there's some nose blood coming out. Something that informs them that you have to leave for an emergency. That's a footnote. We get back to the main text. Okay? And another thing that breaks the prayer, we already mentioned to recite Surah Fatiha incorrectly on purpose. We mentioned this, right? To recite Surah Fatiha incorrectly on purpose. Okay? Yet another thing that breaks the prayer, is that he changes his mind about the prayer. In other words, if he changes his niyyah, in the middle of the prayer, if he says, okay, I'm not praying anymore, automatically that breaks his salah. Okay? He must have the niyyah throughout the whole act, from the beginning until the end. If any time during the middle of the prayer he changes his niyyah, then his prayer is broken. Another aspect that breaks the wudu is to laugh, is to laugh out loud. Okay? This is something which all of the ulama have agreed upon. If you laugh out loud, that has a voice, a laughter that has a voice, your prayer is null and invalid. Not your wudu is not broken, but your prayer is broken, so you have to start all over again. Suppose you smile. Makruh. That's makruh. Okay? Suppose you laugh a silent laugh. Also makruh. But you laugh a laugh that has a noise to it, this is what actually breaks your prayer. Okay? Another aspect that breaks your prayer is to speak to other people during the prayer. To speak to other people, and you know that it breaks the prayer. If you speak accidentally, then this doesn't break your prayer. But to speak on purpose during the prayer, okay? To speak to someone else, if you speak to someone else, then your prayer is broken, okay? So you ask your friend, what time is it? Or how many rak'ahs does the imam pray? Or what are you eating for lunch? During the prayer, okay? This breaks your prayer, okay? This breaks your prayer. Also, the ulama said that to eat or drink during the prayer, it breaks your prayer. Obviously, to eat or drink during the fard prayers. Some ulama, they allow it in the nafil prayers that you can just drink slightly. The nafil prayers. Remember, the nafil prayers, they are different from the fard prayers. So they said that in the nafil prayer, if you get thirsty and you don't have to walk all the way to the kitchen, you have a glass of water there. Okay, some ulama, they said it's all right. It's not good. It's makruh, but it doesn't break the prayer if you just drink. But to do so in the fard prayer, it breaks your prayer. Okay. Another point that breaks the prayer is if a black dog or a woman or a donkey passes in front of you, between you and your sutra. Okay? If any of these three things pass in front of you and you are praying alone, and it passes right in front of you, then it breaks your prayer. Because the Prophet said three things break the prayer if they pass in front of you. Okay? If a man passes in front of you and you're praying, this doesn't break your prayer, but it's makruh. And you should put your hand out to stop him. This is sunnah. When you are praying and someone is going right in front of you, not 10 meters, 20 meters ahead, no, right in front of you. And especially if you have a sutra, even more so when you have a sutra, you should gently but firmly put your hand out and prevent him. This is of the sunnah. The Prophet ﷺ commanded the Sahaba when they are praying to prevent people from crossing in front of them. However, if a woman or a donkey or a black dog, it crosses in front of you, okay, this breaks the prayer, makes it null and invalid. Now the sister should not think that, astaghfirullah, we are putting them equal to these animals. No, each one has a different reason for it, okay? The woman, because obviously when it passes in front of a man, then his train of thought will be totally broken, so his prayer is considered as if it is invalid. And the donkey is an animal that is dirty. Likewise, the black dog, it is a shaitan. the black dog is a shaitan. So if these three things pass in front of you, your prayer is null and invalid, and you have to start all over again. This is according to the correct opinion of the ulama. Okay. And this is, like I said, an authentic hadith in Bukhari and Muslim, that these three things break the prayer. Okay. With that, inshallah, we, like I said, there are some more aspects which break the prayer, but these are the more important ones. And, you know, basically anything that you do that goes against one of the arkan, or that is mentioned in the hadith, that breaks the prayer, this and this breaks the prayer, these things, they break the salah, and a person must start all over again from the beginning. With that, we conclude today's fiqh session. And inshallah, if there are any questions, and the sisters, they have another session after this private session, so they might want to wait with their questions also, if the brothers don't want to ask now. MashaAllah, oh God. Hold on, we're starting the question after the question.
Okay. Can y'all please sit down before I...
Brothers, question answers. Come on, question answers, guys. Just ask.
The first of these is, if you already had some food in your mouth and you're finishing chewing it, is your prayer invalid? So I've been started in the food in your mouth.
Well, then you don't start until you swallow the food. If the salah has started and you have some food in your mouth, okay, you should not start until you swallow the food. Now, if you have, like, for example, a piece of food stuck in your teeth, and during the prayer it comes out and you swallow it, that doesn't break the prayer. What breaks the prayer is when you intentionally eat something. We're not talking about a small piece of meat or small piece of food that is stuck to your teeth and it comes out. No. When you intentionally eat during the prayer, the ulama said that the five prayers, it makes it null and invalid. Now,
I've read a hadith that a sutra is 3 feet high. How does it fit with the Quranic rationale?
No, this hadith says that it is encouraged to have a sutra that is rather high. And the hadith says that it is like the saddle that you put on a camel. The saddle that you put on a camel would be roughly like that high or something, you know? So it should be high. But that doesn't mean that that's the lowest sutra. I mean, if you don't find something as big as that, okay, then take anything. Take anything that people can see that this is a sutra. They realize that this is a sutra. Therefore, if you don't find something but a Quranic rack or something like this, or even your backpack or even a book, you know, make it stand up like this, your book, so that people know that this is a sutra. People know that you are praying and this is your sutra, and they should not cross in front of it. So basically, it is encouraged to have a big sutra so people can see. But if you don't have, if you can't find that, then you're allowed to use any sutra.
What if a woman passes in front of a woman?
I don't think that breaks the salah. Allah knows that. I don't think that breaks the salah. If a woman passes in front of another woman, this is makruh. It takes the same status as a man passing in front of another man.
What about putting your hands down after the ruku? Hands on me.
What about putting your hands down after the ruku? Oh, so when you stand there from the ruku, okay, the correct opinion with that is that you leave your hands hanging down. Okay? The majority of scholars say that it should... No, the majority say you should leave it hanging down. A minority say you should put it back up, including Shaykh bin Baz, rahimahullah. Okay? No, there is no hadith for either opinion. It just goes back to ijtihad, you see? But the majority of the ulama of the past and the present, they say that you leave your hands hanging in ruku. And some of the ulama, major ulama, but some of them, say that you should put your hands back up. But the opinion that I follow is that you leave it hanging down, and Allah knows best. Yeah.
A prayer rug be used as...
Yes, if you don't find anything else except a prayer rug. Oh, you mean a folded up prayer rug? Yes. As for if you just have a prayer rug like that, then no. You should have some type of physical object. If you're praying on a prayer rug, then that doesn't qualify as a sutra. If you fold up the prayer rug and you put it in front of you, then inshallah, if you don't have anything longer or taller than that, then that's fine. You know. Let's ask the brothers, because this is, I'm going to go there. Now, the prayer rug does not give you any benefit whatsoever. You can pray anywhere you want. Okay, prayer rug doesn't give you any benefit whatsoever. Any more blessings, nothing.
What if your body is not flexible enough to sit properly during the tashahhud? What do you do? Meaning if you have bad knees and they don't bend properly?
Well, we said it is sunnah to sit in this manner. It is rukun to be sitting. So sit in any fashion. Even if you have to sit cross-legged. That's the rukun. The sunnah is to sit in this manner. So what I would advise is that the brother should make a habit of doing this and know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created man in a perfect manner in the sense that he is so adaptable to his atmosphere and environment. Keep on practicing and of a surety eventually you'll be able to sit like that. Okay? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will cause your muscles and your tendons or whatever to be able to adapt to that posture. You'll be able to sit praying like that.
This is the last question, and all you brothers who have questions for Brother Yasir, you can ask him at lunch.
At lunch, inshallah, yeah.
Because he has to do Q&A with the sisters. This is the last. When I'm praying and I go down for sajda, many times my cat is sitting there, or my sunglasses or car keys are where I need to place my forehead and nose. Is it makruh for me to move them out of the way and will it lessen my reward of my prayer, or will Allah understand when I have to move them away?
No, inshallah, if she has to move something, then inshallah, no sin is upon her. We even said there is no sin anyway, even if she removes it for no reason. But of course, if there is something that is preventing her from doing sajda, then she has to remove it. What the hadith was referring to was to do it for no reason or just for a small benefit. And it is proper not to have any extra actions of the salah. So obviously, if you have to move it and you're not going to be able to do sajda, then of course that is allowed, inshallah. And even if you don't have to, it's allowed, but it's just makruh. It doesn't break the prayer, it's just makruh, inshallah.
When someone is not positioned in the proper position, will his prayers, does someone have to be in the same position for the first prayer and the nafl prayer?
Can he move back and forth, backwards and forwards? That's what you're saying? Obviously, this goes back to the reason he's doing so. If, for example, he's praying and all of a sudden a najis falls in front of him or something happens and he has to move a little bit, that's fine. But if he were to move so much that a person would not even know that he is praying, then this is not allowed. Okay? Likewise, if a person is praying his sunnah prayers, and there was a sutra in front of him, but that sutra was removed, so he moved to another sutra close by, front or back or left or right, that's fine. Okay? But he shouldn't move so much or so far that if someone were to look at him, he wouldn't know if he's praying or not. Okay? So you have to look, it goes back to the amount or the, you know, the situation. Yeah, if there's a space in front of you, you should go up and fill up that gap. And, huh? Yes, even while you're praying. Yes, you should fill up the gap even while you're praying. No, he pushed that person back when another person came. When he was praying alone, I believe it was with Ibn Abbas. Okay, Ibn Abbas came and stood right next to his left-hand side. So the Prophet ﷺ took him from behind and moved him to his right-hand side. And that was feet-to-feet for two people. Then another companion came, okay, and then he stood on his left-hand side. When this occurred, the Prophet ﷺ pushed both of them behind him. Okay, so when two people are praying, it is sunnah to pray together, feet-to-feet, together. Okay, this is the sunnah way of doing it. But, I mean, you know, don't raise... whatever, you know, because you know how our culture and everything is.